This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Yeah. You're listening to the Electric Sheep Film Show on Resonance 104.4 FM and DAB in London. I'm Electric Sheep Magazine Assistant Editor Alex Fitch, and the track you've just listened to is the classic Vietnam by Jimmy Cliff. This is not to reflect the fact that there are various conflicts going on around the world at the moment, but rather one of the films that I'm going to be discussing with its director in today's show is all about communicating with people from beyond the grave. The theme of tonight's show is summer festivals, which is to say that I'm talking to the directors of three films that have recently received their European premieres at various festivals around the continent. In the second half of today's show, I'll be talking to Korean director Bong Joon-ho about his latest movie Okja, an uproarious sci-fi comedy featuring Jake Gyllenhaal, Paul Dano and Tilda Swinton, which premiered at Cannes. Okja is a fantastic film, receiving its main release on Netflix at the end of this month. So tune in to the second half of the show to hear my interview with the director, who also has the movies The Host and Snowpiercer under his belt. Before that, I'm talking to a pair of American independent directors whose movies screened at the London Sundance Film Festival earlier this month. Coming up next, I'm talking to Miguel Arteta about his film Beatrice at Dinner. This is a drama about class conflict with the backdrop of environmental disaster, starring John Lithgow and Salma Hayek. Hayek is fantastic in the lead role as an immigrant masseuse who finds herself invited to a dinner populated by the great and the good of LA, and her initial awe at being included in such company slowly but surely turns to derision and disgust as she finds out just how horrible these people are. Arteta reunites with his regular collaborator Mike White on this movie, the pair of them having written such movies as Chuck and Buck and The Good Girl at the start of their careers. So it's fantastic to see this pair of filmmakers working together again. Here's an extract from the trailer, followed by my interview with the director.
This is my dear friend, Beatrice.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Beatrice is a healer.
I do massage, sound therapy, Reiki.
This woman is a saint. It's like birds fly out of the sky and land on her shoulder.
Aw, it's like Snow White.
Can I get another bourbon, hun?
Oh, no, Doug, this is Beatrice. She's staying for dinner.
Oh, you were hovering. I just figured you were part of the staff.
Well, I know you.
Doug's famous. He's been on the news.
I don't know why. I think I know you.
Ever dance in Vegas? Thank you for having us at your stunning home. I couldn't be more pleased at how smoothly this whole process has gone. Alex, if any of those efforts were illegal, I do not know you, nor was I even here tonight.
Neither was I, and it's my house.
Yeah. I would just like to say to Kathy and Grant, thank you for having me. When I first came to the United States a long time ago...
Did you come legally?
Yes.
You've directed a number of episodes of Mike White's TV show, but this is the first film you've worked with him on since the start of both your careers in the early 2000s. Had you been looking for another project to work on together in that time?
I have been hoping for a script from Mike for 15 years, but he has started directing as well. In fact, he has a movie he directed this year with Ben Stiller that will come out with Amazon. That is quite brilliant, but I'm just very happy that he finally called again to do a feature. Mm.
It's a very powerful film, and it's a film that seems very relevant in the age of Trump, unfortunately. You know, how a great number of people, feel disenfranchised when confronted by these malevolent kind of elderly white men in positions of power. When you were discussing the film with Mike, were those the kind of issues that you were thinking of?
You know, we never imagined that Donald Trump would be elected, and the fact that our movie in some ways is more relevant now that he got elected is very little consolation to the fact that he got elected.
So, yeah, yeah.
It's meant to be an argument, you know, that makes you think about what your priorities are. And I think what Mike did in the script is brilliant. It is not just about like liberals versus conservatives. I think the way that his character and the way that John Lithgow portrayed that character is, you know, it's pretty fair in terms of giving him an opportunity to say, I believe in my convictions.
Yeah.
And it's not quite like Trump. I don't know if Trump believes in his convictions. You know, I think he's a far more Machiavellian character in some ways. I think the movie's pretty fair in terms of giving the other side some intelligent arguments, you know.
Yeah.
The way John Lithgow talks about hunting, you know, hunting ought to be like one of the first things we should outlaw in this world. But the way he talks about hunting, it's almost like a spiritual. It's a beautiful passage, beautifully delivered. And the way he makes an argument to her, you know, should all be, you know, does everything need to be this sad? It's like a good argument.
Yeah.
I think that's what the strength of the script is well balanced.
One thing that this film has in common with one of your earlier collaborations with Mike, The Good Girl, is that you've cast an actress who's incredibly glamorous and put her in a very dowdy role, the same way as you did with Jennifer Aniston in The Good Girl. And indeed, Beatrice is judged immediately when she arrives at the dinner party by the other guests by her appearance. But in terms of casting actresses in roles that perhaps present them in a less glamorous way to the world, do the likes of Salma and Jennifer find that challenging, or actually, because they're not offered those kind of roles, is it something that they embrace wholeheartedly?
It always comes down to the pants. Jennifer Aniston had to wear those awful jeans, and Salma Hayek wears some very outdated, sad pants in this movie. But it's fun to find a role for an actress. But in this case, you know, Mike was saying, you know, Salma is the best well-known Mexican actress in the United States, and like, it would be very interesting to have her play this part, you know, that is really trying to show you what it's like to be an immigrant today in the United States. And we had faith in her because, you know, we wanted Beatrice to be, above all, intelligent. And something that I think is Salma's primordial quality is actually not beautiful, but it's her intelligence. She's, you can see it in her eyes. It just radiates out of her. She's not only funny and quick, but she's also just wicked smart. And that was what we needed for this role. You know, to be that person that, you know, these people in the dinner party, this entitled billionaires would never pay the time of day, but there's something in her eyes, her intelligence and the strength of her convictions makes her someone that, you know, the John Lithgow character wants to pay attention to. So she was particularly well suited because of that. That she happens to be a glamour icon at the same time was actually played against us, and, you know, we just had to ignore that and just have her portray the character the way it's meant to be. And she was very brave, you know, there's no makeup in the picture. And the movie was shot in, you know, 18 days, and she had to, like, you know, it was a real labor of love.
Well, I was going to ask you, actually, how much she was relying on method acting, because there's a very powerful scene where she's sitting listening to John Lithgow talking about hunting, and you can, you know, sense her internal turmoil, but she's got this slight twitch underneath one of her eyes. Was that the kind of shot that you left till towards the end of the shoot and just let the tiredness kind of be evoked in the performance?
You know, that's my favorite shot in the movie.
It's amazing.
The close-up of her listening to John Lithgow talking about hunting. And I think that she trusted, you know, she is like this character. She's an empath, and she's a complete animal activist. And I think that, you know, I just asked her to be like, listen, you're all those things already. Just now, please do nothing, because it's all there, and it will come out. So it was an exercise in doing the least amount possible and having the audience leaning towards her. But in that passage particularly, while John is talking about killing a rhino, you can really, I think the twitching came out of it, really, she just could not, you know, it's just something that just drives her insane. And you know, even though she was just trying to listen, you can see such a world of conflict inside of her. I'm so proud of her performance, and to me, that's the moment.
Absolutely. The film ends, I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but she's kind of presents herself with only two choices, having been presented with this awful human being that she can't really do anything to other than perhaps murder him or kill herself. I mean, that seems kind of a bleak presentation to the audience that, you know, if we do find ourselves in the world of Trump, where these malevolent old men are ruining the world, is the only choice murder or suicide?
Well, you feel that way sometimes, don't you? I mean,
like, yeah.
It's really very bleak and hopeless outlook that America is taking with the rest of the world. And you know, there's days I wake up where I want to, like, I just give up. It's just too awful.
Yeah.
So the movie, you know, it's meant to be entertaining and tense and funny, but it's also ultimately not meant to pre-digest everything for you and just leave you in a place where you're thinking, and maybe reflect the frustration of our times.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to spoil what the movie is about, but I think if you're going to see the movie, I think hopefully you'll come out realizing that, like, yes, I feel this frustrated, and yes, it's up to me to think about what's the best path forward.
In terms of your and Mike's research for the movie, how many people have you come across who have a goat in their front room?
That is a very good question. I'm not sure how many there are, but I do love goats, and I've worked with them before. And they're lovely animals to put in front of a camera. Their eyes are so soulful. So I was really very excited. It's a pygmy goat. I'm very excited. And Salma was also could not wait to get her hands on the pygmy goat. But hopefully we'll start a trend and have more goats inside.
Yeah, maybe. On a completely different note, as I am interviewing you, and I might not get this opportunity again, you directed an episode of one of my favorite TV shows, American Horror Story.
Oh, cool.
And you're not known for directing genre, so that's a rare example of you doing something that's horror-related.
Thank you for noticing.
It's fantastic. And, hey, what was it like working on such an absurd program where you think anything could happen any week? One week we've got serial killers, the next we've got ghosts, the next, you know. And would you be interested in working that kind of genre again?
I am. And I had a nightmare that I want to turn into a franchise. And I haven't done that episode of American Horror on the first season. Definitely inspired me. You know, it was very freeing because Ryan Murphy said to me, Miguel, I love what you do. I just have one request. Never stop moving the camera.
Okay.
Because usually I make movies about people talking that are just like, you know, two people in a bench talking. And so it was very freeing, you know, hearing to say, like, just move the camera. It doesn't matter how you do it. Just move it. And I had a great time cinematically, you know, playing with that. Plus, I got to work with my friend Connie Britton, who is in Beatrice at Dinner.
Mm.
We have been friends. We met at Sundance, at the Sundance Labs. You know, she was acting in them, and I was teaching there. We've been friends for a long time, and so I was very happy to be able to do that episode. I got to do it because I ran into her at a coffee shop, and she was like, I'm doing this. Will you please come do an episode? And it was very liberating for me. So yes, there will be a Miguel Arteta horror movie coming soon.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Cheers, you too.
Hey, I'm really delighted that you noticed that close-up of Sama. It literally is my favorite moment of the whole movie.
Yeah, it's great.
She's great, isn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Brilliant, thanks. Beatrice at Dinner, like many of the films showing at the London Sundance Film Festival, is still touring various festivals around the world and will hopefully be released in the UK on a wide release soon. You can find more information about Beatrice at Dinner by going to beatriceatdinnermovie.com. That's BEATRIZ at dinnermovie.com. Coming up next, you can hear my interview with Michael Almereyda, an independent filmmaker with a variety of different genres and styles under his belt, including the fantastic monochrome sequel to Dracula, Nadja, a CCTV-influenced production of Hamlet with Ethan Hawke, and his latest movie has a Black Mirror vibe, being an adaptation of the play Marjorie Prime. The film is about two generations of the same family, who are only able to deal with the loss of their loved ones by having them reincarnated as holograms, avatars whose personality is based on conversations with their living relatives, and their personalities develop as they learn more and more about their former selves. To put you in the mood, here's a song which has certain reflections of Marjorie Prime, a movie which shows the slow
Decline of Good Weather in LA as torrential rain gives way to snow, alongside the replacement of humans by holograms. So here's Regina Spektor with 20 Years of Snow.
See that you're kind of working in a genre that people are beginning to get familiar with via the likes of Black Mirror on TV, that it's taking the kind of technology that's almost available and extrapolating it into a potential near future. Certainly, you know, we're all social media users. Personally, actually, I have a friend from school who died, and his Facebook page is still there. And so it's as if people do have a presence after their death. Was that the kind of thing that you were thinking about when you started working on this project?
I started working on the project because of the lead actress, Lois Smith, who had been approached to do the play. And through the reading period and then the performance, she was so excited about it, I jumped to Los Angeles to see her in the play. So it was more sentimental. My attachment to the play was simply I wanted to work with Lois.
Okay.
And was dealing with ideas that were intriguing and important to me, and I think to anyone who's thinking about their lives and their place in the world, because it's really about what happens as you get older and how you hold on to people or how you hold on to yourself as your memory and your identity begin to change. So it's a profound play, but it's also light on its feet, and I was impressed by that. And I recognized that it could be a movie without too much mangling and changing.
Yeah.
And Black Mirror was something that John Hamm let me know about. I was sort of oblivious to it, and then I when I met with him, I thought of him independent of Black Mirror, but there's something resonant and similar about those stories. I'm talking about the first season, because we shot before the second season. But to get back to your question, you know, there's a part of Holy Motors, the Leos Carax movie, set in a cemetery where on the tombstones it says, visit my website.
Ah, so that's brilliant.
So there is this sense that people are trying to live on and tipping their toe into eternity when you get online like that, when you have a web presence. Mm. It doesn't quite dissolve when you die.
Indeed. Well, you started your career writing science fiction scripts like Cherry 2000, Until the End of the World. Even I just found out you did
Total Recall. Yeah.
Some work on Total Recall. So in terms of directing science fiction, was it a genre that you wanted to return to at some point?
This is a very low-key kind of science fiction.
Sure, but even so.
And I've also finished recently a movie about my friend Hampton Fancher, who wrote Blade Runner. So I feel an affiliation with science fiction and an acquaintance with science fiction, but I'm really more interested in the present, and it's not much of a... I'd be pretending if I presented myself as a science fiction person. But I happened to look up Harrison Ford when he was promoting Blade Runner on the David Letterman show, and he says, it's not really science fiction, it's futurism. And I don't know what he meant by that, but I'm inclined to adapt the phrase. It's a way of looking at the present through the lens of the immediate future, the future around the corner. And with this movie, even what I've been hearing is that the technology projected in the play is available now and will be within our lifetimes. It'll be a decision people have to make about whether you want your loved ones to be available to you as a holographic computer program. Yeah. That's not far away.
Well, then in a way, it's more that you're interested in the possibilities of technology. So, for example, when you made Hamlet, the play within a play was a film.
Sure.
And it was about actually not only being a film, but the way that we almost feel like we're always being filmed by CCTV. And actually, since you made Hamlet, it's almost become a voluntary thing that everyone wants to be captured on film for Facebook, you know, and Twitter and so on, as if now you don't really exist unless you're on someone's camera.
No, that's very clear and very true. Everyone tends to be their own team of paparazzi. You have your own built-in camera crew. And I don't know how I feel about that. I'm a person who's camera shy, so I'm much more comfortable behind the camera, and that's a cliche of filmmakers in general, but I'd say that's inarguable, what you just said. Sure.
Yeah. In terms of the possibilities that your film offers, I mean, I wouldn't want to inflict tragedy on anyone, but say a close friend of yours or a member of your family died and you were given the opportunity to deal with unresolved issues by talking to them from beyond the grave, albeit a version of them through technology rather than the actual self, would you be tempted to do so?
No one's had the sense to ask me that. It's a great question. I probably wouldn't, because I wouldn't trust that that could be a true substitute. And that's one of the characters in the plays is against this technology, doesn't believe in it, and recognizes a fallacy of trying to recreate a human personality and reset the terms. But I can imagine how it's meant to be a comfort, and I know that that's a likely development in people's lives. But I tend to trust memory too. We're always wrestling with our memories, and the memories are always changing. So I don't know if I need technology to remind me of that. But it's a tantalizing premise. You know, the play was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and it's a young playwright who is in many ways grafting the story elements from his own grandmother who had dementia and his parents who would be feeding the woman stories about her life, and she would be forgetting them but holding on to just a few things. And that was the starting point for him. And that's something that more and more people can relate to. I mean, almost everyone I know has an occasion. Someone in their life has a failing memory, dementia's creeping in, and it's urgent, and you feel helpless. So that's one way to try to gain control.
Mm. You mentioned an interest in your friend Hampton Fancher's work, and obviously, as you mentioned, you worked on Total Recall. So the kind of plots that Philip K. Dick worked with, in terms of people questioning their humanity, questioning their reality, whether they're reincarnated as an android, whether they're reincarnated in a simulation. Those kind of worries about humanity as technology sort of starts to absorb us. Is that something, you know, that concerns you, or do you think as humanity we'll always be able to cope?
I could answer these. The answer is yes, it does concern me. And Philip K. Dick was obviously tapping into concerns and recognitions that were a little bit ahead of the game, and now we're catching up with him. It seems clear and almost self-evident that humanity is in a state of bewilderment. The way that that reality can be like a hall of mirrors and invade politics and invade relationships, not just between people but between nations, is with us in a very definite way right now. So it's not, it feels inescapable and challenging, to put it mildly.
So with your new film being based on a play and your previous film being based on a lesser known Shakespeare play, when you see things on stage, does that occasionally make you think, I can see this as a movie, this is trapped by the proscenium arch, I can think of ways that I could expand this in every direction?
Well, I tend to think of everything like that. It's a disease. I mean, I think of stories like that and current events like that. I think anything can be a movie. And I've been lucky to be able to adapt a few plays, but Shakespeare is a genre unto himself, so I don't even think Shakespeare is just very cinematic. And I've been lucky to do two Shakespeare adaptations. This play was ready-made as a chamber piece and felt like something I could run with and liberate in a way. It's the movie. I set the play in a house on the beach, and the presence of the beach is something you can't get in a theater on stage. So that exploded or expanded the play. But it's a reasonable question, but I think any time you bring a camera to a scene, it becomes cinematic. I think the distinction can sometimes be limiting to say, oh, it's a play, it's theatrical. So I try to make cinematic movies. That's the short answer.
Nice. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Like Beatrice at dinner, Michael Almereyda's Marjorie Prime is currently doing a tour of various festivals, but will hopefully receive a wider release in the UK soon. You can find more information about the movie by going to marjorieprimethemovie.com. That's MARJORIE primethemovie.com. And you can find another interview of mine with Michael Almereyda about some of his earlier films, including Paradise, Nadja and Hamlet, by going to www.panelborders.wordpress.com. In the second half of tonight's show, I'm going to be talking to the Korean director Bong Joon-ho about his latest movie, Okja. To put you in the mood for Okja, here's another song about love and loss, Fire and Rain by James Taylor.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Been walking my mind to an easy time, my back turned towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again now. Thought I'd see you one more time again. There's just a few things coming my way this time around now. Thought I'd see you, thought I'd see you.
Okja, an uproarious comedy about GM food, premiered at the Cannes Film Festival to both cheers and derision. Cheers because it's an amazing film, and slight derision because of the Cannes Festival's prejudice against films made by streaming sites such as Netflix. Here's an extract from the trailer, followed by my interview with the director.
We are animal lovers. Our plan is to expose Miranda, rescued Okja, and bring her back to you.
10 years in planning, on the cusp of a product that will feed millions. And what happens? That farmer girl is going to destroy us.
You should know the situation is not good.
I saw Okja last night on a big screen, but TVs are getting bigger and bigger, so there actually isn't a lot of difference anymore. This film, made by a cinema director, a famous cinematographer, but it's going to be watched on TVs.
그 본의 아니게 영화 외적으로도 그 두 경계선을 또 허무는 게 됐네요.
네. It's not his purpose, but he also merged the boundaries between watching how we watch films too. It wasn't his purpose, but that's what happened.
I still think the best way of watching movies is watching the movie in the big screen with other people, laugh together, cry together. That is the best way. But in the long life of the movie, that theatrical period is quite short. After that, we have a movie in the airplane, hotel room, and Blu-ray, and the digital streaming and cable TV, all good. But among them, I love the way of maybe the Blu-ray collecting or the Netflix, the digital cinematheque kind of feeling, digital archiving. With the very high quality of picture and sound, is very good way. 그러니까 영화가 보존되는 방법으로서 되게 좋은 방법 중에 하나인 것 같아요.
It feels like it's a very good way to preserve films.
Few weeks ago, I saw the Stanley Kubrick Clockwork Orange by Netflix with very good quality of picture and sound. It feels like wow, this is some kind of digital archiving of film, and just with the internet, we can see this movie anywhere. So, 잘 공존할 수 있게 빨리 룰을 만들어서.
It feels like that we really have to set the rules quickly so the two can coexist. And maybe it will be Cannes will be the last time we'll hear about this. We'll have discussions about this.
나랑 노아 바움바흐가 무슨 프랑스 법까지 공부를 했냐 말이다.
He doesn't wish filmmakers such as him and Noah Baumbach to study French cinema law.
We should have.
Looking at your career in general, if you look at films like Barking Dogs, The Host...
Did you see Barking Dogs?
I haven't, I'm afraid. I have seen The Host and I've seen Snowpiercer. Yeah. And now with this film, there is this constant theme of man's relationship with nature that you keep returning to. Is it something that then really drives you as a filmmaker to explore that issue?
Yeah, the man and animal, or man with the nature, and all those themes actually 자본주의란 테마에 다 연결되는 것 같은데.
It feels like that all those subjects are connected in the theme of capitalism.
동물하고 관계를 맺는 방식도 사실 자본주의의 시대에 와서 되게 이상해진 거거든.
It feels like the relationship between man and animal has been more obscured as we entered into the era of capitalism. Before that, it wasn't like this.
긴 역사 속에서 계속 우리가 동물을 먹어왔는데
자본주의 이전 시대에는 이렇지는 않았었거든.
Yeah, we have a long history of during the long history of humankind, we have always ate animals, but
동물들을 매스 프로덕션에 포함시켜서.
It was never like this. Currently, we have a weird system of mass production where animals have to suffer.
I'm always interested in animals, and at the same time, I'm always interested in meat. Korea is also the BBQ paradise. Yeah, I love meat from kid, and also I have such a lovely pet. It's a soulmate, my family. But normally, yeah, quite many vegan, vegetarian people in the world, but at the same time, quite many normal people love their pet. At the same time, they enjoy the steak in the restaurant. It's quite common. But they are all the same animal. But in the human world, they always want to separate those two kinds. It's the same animal, but we intentionally separate it. Animal has a very lovely pet, and the other side, animal is kept. There's a huge massacre of animal in the slaughterhouse every day, thousands and millions of, and we separate it actually, and so we leave this animal and we pick up the meat part in the food, you know, whole food market, and so.
그 모순을 한번 다뤄보고 싶었어요.
He wanted to deal with that contradictory thing that's going on, phenomenon.
그래서 아까 자연과 인간의 관계를 뭐 얘기하셨지만은
And you talked about the relationship between
자연과
인간 human and nature, and he is very interested in that subject. But what he wanted to portray in this film particularly was that humans like animals suffer in this structure of capitalism.
물론 그걸 극복하려는 노력도 하고 있죠.
Of course, we are trying to overcome that.
Filmmaking is very capitalism. You need money. Filmmaking. Very, it's a paradox. I have never seen movie that the money like more than 이게 뭐 5천 50밀리언 넘게 썼는데 이런 돈을
We used 50 million US dollars in this
more than 50 million
for this film, and it's money that he had never seen.
Have you ever seen those amount of money? 타인의 돈을 이렇게 불태워버리는 거다. 내 상상력을 위해서.
It's very pressurizing using such money like that. Not even his, someone else's money like that, just to express his imagination is a very weird and surreal experience to him.
And yeah, for that maybe I'm 그때 감사하지 넷플릭스는 그런 거는 100% 나한테
So he's very appreciative about that Netflix provided guaranteed 100% creative freedom and without interference at all. He was trying and because of that and because you're so thankful of that, he tried to be as responsible as possible.
되게 최대한 effective하게 프로덕션을 하려고 한 거고.
And try to realize the dream within the budget that was provided.
So actually, forget all those controversy about distribution things. This kind of chance is something for us, that this kind of group of directors, me, Noah Baumbach, and Todd Haynes, and all those, get some chance of filmmaking by all those new digital studios. Yeah, so, yeah, so we, this kind of directors all want to make something different, something unique, or something weird, or something perverty, or something. Very normal, the conservative studio always hesitate to support that. But yeah, this is another chance for creators. And yeah, actually, yeah, Netflix 없었다면은 이 영화도 만들어지기 쉽진 않았을
거예요. So without Netflix, this film might not have been made. It's a very weird story, but it has a very big budget.
오늘을 믹스한다고 생각해 본 적이 사실 없고요.
He's never conscious that he's mixing genres.
Good, exciting, many different emotions in the movie. But for me, it's strange. For me, if two-hour movie has one tone or one emotion, it's more strange to me. It's very natural. So many different emotion mood is there. Just 우리의 어제 24시간 한번 다들 생각해보라고 그런 것 같아요.
Let's try to recollect the past 24 hours that we just experienced. He feels like it's a mixture of emotions, not just one consistent emotion. Yeah. It would have been weird if it was one constant emotion.
last month, my father passed away. Heartbreaking, so sad. Every family member is very, sad. But at the same time, the day of funeral, many ridiculous, funny thing happened. Actually, some during the ritual, some old friend of my father fought during the something, and he says, "I cannot live here." It's human life, I think. I think it's quite natural and realistic to me. I never intended some this genre 25%, this mood 35%. I never intended like that. Yeah.
Thinking of that mix of genres, you co-wrote the screenplay with John Rumson,
yeah,
who's known in the UK as a documentary filmmaker and writer, but also someone who approaches weird subject matter and weird subject matter with a sense of humour.
Originally, he was a journalist.
Yes.
And he wrote a book.
Were those kind of interests in weird facets of life from a humorous point of view the kind of things that he brought to the project?
Yeah, the beginning was I watched a movie called Frank. Cute. I enjoyed the movie. Such a very black humor.
But it was based on a true story.
Yeah, exactly. True story. And very funny at the same time, very sad and bitter at the same time. I love the emotion of the. And I checked who wrote this movie, and it was John Rumson. At the time, I didn't know he was a very well-known writer and journalist, and it was much better. He wrote many great books about those kind of big corporation and also the activist or terrorist.
Yes.
The book called Them. Psychopath.
Adventures with Extremists, I think.
And also he wrote that funny, the George Clooney movie, the original.
Oh, The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Yeah. 우리 영화가 내가 하려고 하는 스토리에 되게 최적화되어 있는 작가인 거지, 그러니까.
So because of those facets and traits, he felt like John Rumson was the most appropriate, the most apt person to write this film.
Although I made the whole the structure of the story and I wrote my own Korean language first draft, and from second draft, quite early, John Rumson involved, and he developed the many characters of the Jake Gyllenhaal, Tilda Swinton, Paul Dano, and all ALF members, all English language characters developed by him. Character descriptions, many dialogues. 정말 좋은 작업을 했죠, 존이.
Yeah, he did tremendous. He proved a tremendous work.
He's really funny and interesting man. Yeah. With, I don't know, I still don't know where, but his own British humor.
Yes.
I still don't know Niang's very well, but spending some time with him, maybe this is.
Yeah.
British humor.
I think so.
Maybe I misunderstood. But to keep imagining, this is his humor. Oh, now he's kidding. Oh, serious? Oh, sometimes very confusing. But I enjoy that.
Could you talk a little about what it was like working with Jake and with Tilda Swinton?
In case of Tilda, we begin this work together as co-worker, as a creative partnership. During the making of Snowpiercer, we become Tilda's family and our family become very close friends. So we met here and there, and so during promotion and of Snowpiercer, and maybe the very first day, the moment I show her the my own very first drawing of Okja was during the promotion of Snowpiercer. So from the very early stage, Tilda involved in this project. So we developed the character, Lucy Nancy character together. And also Jake Gyllenhaal, I met him quite many years ago, 2007. It was very casual general meeting by an agency in LA. And so, we talk about my favorite movie, Zodiac, and Brokeback Mountain, blah, 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 blah. 2011, we met again, and finally 2015, someday, I also show some more very special conceptual artwork of the Mija and Okja. Just the routine question to each other, what is your next? And this one, this great strange animal and girl. And Jake immediately, I want, is there any some strange lore there? And then... Yeah, why not? And then everything go very quickly.
I sent him the script, and just the next day he called back. Yeah, let's do it. It's very simple, and there is no complicated back and forth. And Paul Dano, I cannot remember exactly, maybe 2005 or 6. I met him in New York, underground bar, playing music there. At that time, he has his own indie band. To be honest, the music was not so... He was playing the bass guitar and vocal at the same time with three other members in the very small bar. I was a huge fan at the time already, watching the Little Miss Sunshine. And maybe it was before or after There Will Be Blood. Which year?
2007.
Maybe just before that. But already, Little Miss Sunshine, I was so fascinated by him. He was so unique actor, and his song, his music was also unique. And we become friends, and he's film maniac, so film geek and geek. He watched many, many Asian movies, many Korean movies. He know my works, so it's very easy to become friends. And yeah, it was quite happy, so all those casting members together in this movie, finally. So, yeah, and then the other actors, and especially the Mija, the girl, is the core, in the center of the movie. So, actually, she's a very professional actor. So, this is my first time in Cannes competition. But for her, it's the second time. 5 years old, her Korean movie was invited can competition. Maybe she was not there because to go to school, but the movie was there. The Housemaid, Im Sang-soo, directed by Im Sang-soo. She was a little girl, the daughter of that rich family. Anyway, she's very professional and very confident. I really need an image of unstoppable, the girl, that even the huge corporation and crazy world cannot stop her. That kind of strong feeling I wanted. The Mija is not that kind of the very, very cute princess-like girl, always crying kind of feeling. Actually, Mija is a protector of Okja. In the King Kong, King Kong protected the girl. Okja, this is opposite. Yeah, Mija is a... 뭐라 그러지? 보호자를 뭐라 그러지?
The guardian.
Guardian of Okja. So we need some small girl but strong image I want. So... It was Mija makes it possible. Yeah. Like Black Stallion, did you remember? Carol Ballard, the American 1970s American movie called Black Stallion. There is a little boy and the black horse. So their relation there. It's Carol Ballard directed, released by Criterion Blu-ray. And also... It was amazing in Cannes Festival, huge gala dinner. I met the director, George Miller. He's my hero. I watched the Mad Max Road Warrior, the second one, 25 times or 37 times, so many. And also his new one, The Fury Road, is a beautiful movie. He's my hero. And I met him finally in Cannes Festival a few days ago. We did a wonderful dinner together, talking about each other's movie, and among his movie, relatively less well known, but The Babe, The Pig, the second one, The Babe, The Pig in the City. I really love that movie. That movie is slightly underrated. It's a very beautiful movie, and that movie was also quite inspiring to Okja. It's a pig movie. The great thing is Okja is a closing film of Sydney Film Festival, and Georgie will come. I'm so happy with that.
Well, it's also the flip side of The Host. There you have people running away from a giant monster, while here you have people trying to
follow,
capture.
Yeah. And many the eating scene in the movie is all the same. Thank you.
Okja by Bong Joon-ho is released on Netflix on the 28th of June, and you can find more information about the film by going to netflix.com. You can read my interview with the 13-year-old star of Okja, Ahn Seo-hyun, by going to electricsheepmagazine.com. The interviews you heard on this evening's show were about films that screened at the Cannes Film Festival and the London Sundance Film Festival. And indeed, over the summer, there are various other festivals taking place across the UK. There's the City in Motion Festival, taking place in London in June and July. The Deep Fried Film Festival in July and August. The London Indian Film Festival, taking place in July. And outside of London, you can find the likes of the Loch Ness Film Festival and the Shot by the Sea Festival of Moving Image. For more information about all of these, please go to film.britishcouncil.org. In my interview with Bong Joon-ho, I spoke to the director about new funding streams for film, and indeed Okja was paid for by Netflix. But for lower budget filmmakers, Kickstarter is often a good revenue to get their projects funded, and launching yesterday on Kickstarter is a short supernatural horror film, Deep Clean, by comic book artist Krent Abel and Matt Harlock. Matt and Krent are hoping to raise £25,000 to fund this film, with pledges including a 30-minute soundtrack mix, a download of the movie, an Art of the Film ebook, various art prints, and much more. Matt Harlock has directed various documentaries, such as American, The Bill Hicks Story, and indeed a film about Krent himself called Ink, Cox, and Rock and Roll. Krent is a writer, graphic artist, and visual storyteller whose work has been published in Stool Pigeon, Vice, Enemy, and The Guardian Guide. So their collaboration should prove to be a really interesting film. For more information about Deep Clean by Matt Harlock and Krent Abel, search for the film at kickstarter.com. Having looked at summer film festivals in this month's episode of The Electric Film Show, next month we're looking at summer exhibitions, in particular the Barbican's new exhibition about science fiction, which includes props by Patrick Tartupoulos, original art by Jerry Anderson, a chair designed for Jodorowsky's adaptation of Dune by H.R. Giger, and much more. I'm also talking to the cinematographer Arthur Jaffer, who worked on such films as Crooklyn, Malcolm X, and Daughters of the Dust, who currently has a solo show at the Serpentine Gallery in London. In the meantime, you can find all previous Electric Sheep podcasts by going to electricsheepmagazine.com/events, where there's always a link to the broadcast version of the Electric Sheep film show in advance of the extended podcast being put online. The Electric Sheep film show was recorded, edited, and introduced by Alex Fitch and is a Panel Borders production. Having teased you with an extract of The Mummers and the Puppers in the trailer for Okja, here's the full version of Dedicated to the One I Love to play out.
Each night before you go to bed. This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.